I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Pilkington is somebody who can really tell us about retail. Mark, you founded Splendor.com, the world's first direct-to-consumer e-commerce brand. So, at some point, if you could tie that in to the conversation as you share with us the transition that the retail industry has gone through as a result of people saying, hey, we're paying too much in these stores now, and the e-commerce piece of this puzzle that is coming into play, and just, again, just bringing it home for us at the point where you know it'll really tie in, share with us some of your own dealings with your own company, Splendor.com.
No problem. Well, where we left it before, we had all these markups and this long supply chain with the brands and the retail. Now, what happened with the technological revolution was that the most obvious bit is that e-commerce enabled people to buy things from factories or from brands without having to buy them from stores. Now, the actual cost of fulfillment through e-commerce is about 8 to 12% of sales, whereas the cost of selling through stores is 35 to 45% of sales. So e-commerce is clearly a lot cheaper because you're missing out all those physical stores. Now, I think that's well known, so I don't want to dwell on that bit of it. What I think is not as well understood was that with the information revolution, the technological revolution, we also found another way to evaluate brands without necessarily having all this advertising. See, you know, when you buy something now, a lot of what people do now is they go on social media or they go on Google, they go on Amazon, and they look at the product reviews. And the product reviews are from other people like themselves. So they're not getting the information from the brands anymore. They're getting it direct from other users. And those reviews are more objective, if you like, than the brand's own opinion of itself. So people are able to find out whether products are good or not by using, by listening to influencers or by peer reviews or from their friends on social media. They no longer need the brand's advertising to tell them about products. Indeed, no matter how much advertising a brand does, if its product isn't good these days, if it doesn't stack up, then that's going to go viral and the brand will suffer. Conversely, if you're an entrepreneur with a great new product that's really going to make a big impact on people, that news can also go viral. So you no longer need the huge advertising budget, and you don't need the sales forces of the traditional brand to sell it in through retail. You can just have a website, put it on social media, and if it's good enough, people are going to spread the word for you for free. So it's not just that the existence of dot-coms has enabled us to miss out the retail stage supply chain. It's that all the product reviews and the online information revolution has meant that we can miss out the traditional branded stage, and we can now get products almost directly from the factories without the need for these other stages. And without these other stages and the costs involved in them, we can therefore get product at a dramatically lower cost. And that's what the whole direct-to-consumer movement is about. Now, the direct-to-consumer movement really gained power after about 2010, when companies like Warby Parker in eyeglasses, or Casper in mattresses, or Everlane in fashion, or Bonobos in menswear, these brands now are becoming more famous. They started from 2010. But I actually had the idea of doing that with Splendor.com back in 1999 because I'd worked in all the stages of the supply chain. I just said, well, what happens if you miss it all out? And it was myself and like three or four colleagues sitting in a tiny little office. And we thought, we'll just take the products from the factories. We'll obviously design them. We had a little design room with a designer and I think one sewing machinist. And we'll take it straight from the factory and we'll sell it on our website. And I did lingerie again, or intimate apparel, as you call it. And we did intimate apparel that was very luxurious, like a top European brand, at a really competitive price. And that was our pitch. So, you know, I was doing that way back then, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, it was quite successful. But in those days, of course, the internet was not as fast and it wasn't as well developed. as it is now. And above all, you didn't have all the social media, so the news couldn't go viral. So we had a group of probably 200 or 300 friends who loved this product because, you know, they knew about it through us. You know, we told them about it. We used to have parties where we'd show them. And they used to just say, this is amazing because it's so inexpensive for what it is. And they loved it. But it didn't go wider than that. And the thing that the social media viral effect has had is that it enables it to go very, very wide very quickly. And that's what's happening now because those brands I talked about, like the Warby Parkers and co, they've got a product that is dramatically better at a really great price, at a much lower price than what a branded product, traditional branded product in a traditional store would be.
So, Mark, one of the things I'm curious about, with the being online, as you mentioned, social media is there. We know that folks have, you know, there's worldwide access to the net. Are startup companies who are selling direct to consumer now finding that their customers are coming from all over the world, or are they still coming primarily from the country where the company is based?
Well, of course, you've got to do an element of marketing, and you've got to have distribution centers and things like that. But, you know, it's certainly people are marketing on a much wider geographical basis than they were before. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a practical example of that. You know, there's a company called Alibaba, which is actually the largest internet company in the world. It's based in China. Mm-hmm. And they have their website, which is called, their consumer website is called AliExpress. And AliExpress now has become a huge player in Russia because they can ship stuff straight over. China shares a border with Russia, and they've got a low tariff arrangement. And they ship the stuff directly into Russia. And they've taken a huge slice of the Russian retail market with the products coming in, flooding in straight from Chinese factories into the Russian market with a very low markup over AliExpress. So that's an example of how things are flowing across border. And for the Russians, it's great because they can get all this really good quality stuff very, very cheaply. And it's really revolutionized the Russian retail market.
And so in the meantime, what is it doing to the stores? Are they holding their own, or is the retail industry hurting to the extent that, you know, we have these other people with these big boxes, these great facilities now, that people are not, you know, are people visiting as much as they used to? Or are they seeing a downward slide there?
They're seeing a big downward slide. We're seeing absolute catastrophe, to be honest. Since the middle of 2015, a huge number of brands has gone bankrupt. Or into Chapter 11, we've seen Sears, Kmart, American Apparel. We've had Toys R Us. We've had Sports Authority, Gymboree, Claire's. There's something like 40 major brands that have gone bankrupt. Now, you in the past, you'd have one or two every 5 years or something like that. And that you'd usually be at the height of big recessions, like the 2008 recession. But the thing about this in 2015 is it's happening in a high-growth economy. So it's really, really, really a real crisis, what we call an apocalypse in the retail industry.
So when we come back, can you share with us some ideas of what people in the retail industry might be able to do to help revive the industry?
Yes, certainly.
Okay. Our guest, Mark Pilkington, and I will be right back.